Welcome to The Approximate Hour, with myself, Wolfman Dave, and...
Shizlane.
A fun little podcast about the adventures of aspiring artists.
We are excited to be back again this week with more adventures and fun topics. For example, our Geeky Gossip with the Guys topic today is, who can take down a Jedi?
A challenging topic, as there's a lot to discuss in the Star Wars universe and multiverse.
Well, there's the gravity of the Death Star.
Which way is up on that thing?
I don't even know. And you know, oh wait, the purpose of Jar Jar Binks.
And... what Jar Jar Binks' creator's mother thinks of him.
And then there's the strange edits that Lucas made after the original films that we already love were just fine the way they were.
My photon torpedoes don't need any addition.
And, you know, Han shot first. So then
Han did shoot first.
Right. So and
Han is not a Photoshop effect that you could just move out of the way.
And then there's, you know, the ongoing storyline of the Clone Wars.
You know, nearly impenetrable, but infinitely entertaining.
Right. Getting back on track, today's special guest is Joe Filippone, writer, producer, and actor.
And all around strange and interesting character. Our artistic performance today will be a reading of a short story I wrote some time ago for the Halloween season that I like to call Anthony.
And on Take Your Health Back, we shall be discussing the concerns of taking lots of vitamins, supplements, or pills.
Finally, our favorite advice columnist, Jeannie the Giant Killer from Bad Gas Pal, will be joining us later on in the show for her own take on resolving personal issues. But for now, let's begin with this week's adventures.
Today's, or this week's adventures, include what it's like to be an artist and feel supported by the different people in your life.
And the events that I'm thinking of really actually deal with support in that immediate moment. Like, what it's like to kind of be there and know where you stand.
Well, it starts out when you're a kid, right? You do that recital and you've got family members out there that are supporting you. There's the aunt or uncle, or if you're really lucky, parent, that also is an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And they identify with you. And there you are. Oh, yes, this person supports me and understands me.
Yeah, but you don't always have that, do you?
No. No, you don't. You have the people out there, though, that support you despite the fact that you're becoming the crazy artist in your family.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, go you. You're different. You're awesome.
Yubi,
I don't get it.
You be you, boo.
Right. You be you. And as you get older, I think the best way to survive as an artist is to find other artists on that same struggle as you.
And we live in the right corner of the world for that, don't we?
Absolutely.
We do seem to find a lot of them.
Holly weird.
Holly wad. Because it's a wad of weird.
Right. Anyway, so moving on.
People.
And you know, I think it's important to note that you also include friends over the time that mimic those relationships from the family. So you've got the friends that don't perform at all, but they come to your shows and they support you and they think you're amazing.
You know, the moms and dads, sort of.
Right. And then there's that group that you put around you that are also artists that are, you know, maybe crazier even than you are at that moment that you're performing, which comes to our point of this, this topic. What happened this weekend when we had to perform for a wedding?
All right. So it began, like, it's been a long time since I played guitar this long. And so it felt really good to be back in the saddle. But that said, let me back up. We were asked to do a five or six song set. It was not very long. It was
In fact, it started out that we were just going to do the first dance. And when I said we had a few more songs, they welcomed that.
By we, you meant me, actually.
Well, yay, you
Well,
love
I mean,
it.
I'm way folksier than you.
Right, true. And
so
then
it's like, we have a lot of songs. Wolf, get us songs. Okay.
Well, on top of that, they lost their harpist. They were on a tight budget, as you often are, trying to have this amazing wedding. And they had to choose between a coordinator or a harpist. And that's always a tough choice, you know. Ends up being the coordinator because otherwise that day ends up being a nightmare for both the bride and the groom. They can't relax. They can't enjoy their day. That $500 is usually very well spent.
And the harpist is not going to crack the whip on you to be on time.
That's right.
I mean, the harpist will be on time for themselves.
So we'd offered this as a gift.
Again,
you
keep saying that word we. You keep using that word.
Hey, you loved it and you agreed to it.
I don't think it means what you think it means. So we volunteered ourselves for this whole thing.
That's right.
And
we added some music because we were learning more songs as we were, you know, messing around with the guitar, trying to figure out what we were going to do in general.
Yeah.
We came up with some more songs.
Yeah, because like for over a couple of days, I just started noodling. And it's like, hey, how's this sound? Yeah, let's use that one. How's this one? No, not that one.
So I'm in the bridal chamber and they give us the 15 minutes till go. And we had about 10 minutes worth of music, so that's perfect. I get down there. I have 5 minutes to relax for a second, get the DJ to cut off the music.
Channel
we play,
your G.
That's right. We play our four songs, our 10 minutes. And then the very last song, the fifth song, was for the bridal party. Besides the bride.
The processional of the party.
Right. So we're good to go. We've got the timing. Well, I couldn't get the DJ to turn off right away, so it turned out I thought we were going to be now 5 minutes late.
Oh, no!
Oh, right, and you don't want to be the reason why a wedding's late.
That's a negatory.
So we get started, we finish our set, I look around to see the wedding party, where they are, and no one's ready.
And there's this funny sort of quiet that settled over all of these patrons.
That were ready for the whole thing to start.
Well, that were ready for something.
Yeah, we'd warm them up.
Anything all to happen. Like, sure. We kind of work the crowd a little bit, and it's like, okay, y'all ready for some love.
And now we need to vamp. So we did, and when I say we did, Wolf did more of this than I did. But yay. Here's where the support comes in. This is why we do what we do.
Because in the initial moments where we're fumbling over each other, practically, like, okay, what do we do now? Do you have another song? I don't know. Do you have another song? I don't play guitar. Ah! And
members of the audience started speaking up. They started singing. We had someone come and join us, our great friend Tadao Tamatsu. He comes up and just starts singing What a Wonderful World.
Yeah. Somebody requested that out of, like, hey, well, first, after they beat the crap out of the guy that said Freebird, they said, sing It's a Wonderful World. And I'm like, so I started playing it because I knew the tune, but it occurred to me I didn't know the words. And I'm like, hey, Tadao, you do a great Louis Armstrong. Why don't you come up here and do it?
And he did.
I see trees are green.
When he's better at it than you.
My
Louis
is not great.
But anyway, that being said, we suddenly filled what was going to be no minutes of time to suddenly 30 minutes of time. The audience is having a blast, to include the non-performers, because everyone's feeling more relaxed in this moment of tension of why isn't anyone coming out?
And it's supposed to be a happy day. And people wanted to feel good, and people wanted things to go well. And so when we kind of started floundering, everyone was right there with us. They felt that groove with us and were saying, like, almost helping.
Right.
Kind of. Like, we just want a thing to go well, and something has happened. Let's keep up the good mood.
So here's the end result.
So we'll be right there with you.
Right. And here's the end result, the point is to do what you do as artists, and if we could give you any advice that we give ourselves, is to keep surrounding yourself with those types of people.
With positive influences that wish for your success.
That's right, because you're going to show up at an event like that, you might flounder a bit, you might feel as an artist, I could have done more, or I should have done this right, or maybe I missed that note, but at the end of the day, you have this large group of people that loved what you did, had a great time at the wedding, feel that you enhanced it, and you did your job. And that's all we can do as artists.
It reminds me of when we continued to feel the support of other artists in a setting that I thought might feel inhospitable at first.
Oh, Combat Radio.
At Combat Radio, where we were the only people in the room that didn't have an Emmy nomination.
Pretty much. I mean, we were surrounded by incredibly successful people. We didn't know anybody but our own internal group and maybe like one or two others. Mm-hmm. And it can be very intimidating. And we had artists in our group who were intimidated by that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And what do? You immediately need to turn to your support system, the people that you're there with, mm-hmm. and, you know, stand up taller and be more confident.
And you feel like you have a lot of reasons to be intimidated, especially when it's at Combat Radio. And Combat Radio is a wonderful event that is all about benefiting kids and things mm-hmm. like that. But one of the things they do is an auction. And when you are on the starving end of the artist scale,
you can't afford to bid. You wish you could bid.
I wanted, what are they had screen cells and props and stuff that was signed.
Things signed by Disney Imagineers. Yes, and different.
Jinx Yomi Soda.
Right. And voice artists and all these amazing people. And here we are just doing our thing. So what we did is what you always do, is kind of stay within your tighter network, start feeling that support, exuding the confidence, and you move on. And what happened was magical.
Yeah.
We had all these amazing, fantastically talented people ask us about what we were doing and genuinely care.
Guys like Johnny Batos, who is the
Oingo
drummer,
Boingo.
Drummer for Oingo Boingo, and a bunch of other people. I can't even remember all their names now.
Carolyn Hennessy.
Oh, Carolyn Hennessy was rocking on stage with us.
Mm-hmm.
And the key there was to remember that we did have this support network behind us. And so we best thing to do was to be honest with ourselves and allow the work to speak for itself. And indeed it did.
So, in final, you know, in final summary, just remember that it's not only the confidence that you exude, but the support system that you put around you carries through to every single thing that you do. So, as an artist, you can always stand up tall when you know you have people behind you, even if they're not in that room right then and there, that support what you do and believe in you. And that's how you continue to believe in yourself.
And never forget that there are also people in front of you. Make sure they're small so you can step on them.
Squish.
So that's our adventure for this week. Now, I have an idea.
Let's change the subject.
And now, Word Rants with Wolfman Dave. For those who love language beyond abbreviations.
It occurs to me that at no time in my life has the word journey been used in its classical sense, meaning the traversing of actual physical space. Same with adventure and quest. Culture at large has left these words behind. Nearly as I can tell, now a journey is a thing you take in your mind over time. Your journey to stardom, your journey through drug and alcohol rehab, your journey to overcome grief, that sort of thing. While you may go other places while on such journeys, for example, and respectively, going on musical tours, going away to a rehab center, and just getting out of town for a while, that doesn't seem to be necessary. I guess a part of it is that travel is just easier these days, so it's not as big a deal to traverse long distances. That, and we've gotten lazier. Going off my "a journey is in the mind over time" assessment, all you have to do is pick the right obstacle to overcome, and you can go on a journey from the comfort of your own home. And people do. I'm one of them. Finishing Breaking Bad in, like, 2 weeks, while reeling from the effects of a breakup some months ago? That was a journey. Emotionally and mentally, just not physically, I'm in a whole different place now.
Word Rants with Wolfman Dave. A journey for the mind and the soul.
We have Jeannie the Giant Killer here from Bad Gas Pal to share some important life advice.
Are you sure this is a good idea after what happened last week?
Well, considering the dollar amount of her paycheck, yes. Yes, I do.
We don't give her a paycheck.
Exactly.
Oh, right. Welcome. Welcome, Jeannie, to our show.
Yes, welcome, Jeannie. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Wolfman Dave. Oh, and thank you, Ghislaine. It's great to be here.
Tell us again about your advice column, Bad Gas Pal.
Well, it's short for boys are dumb, girls are stupid, and people are lame. Words I live by every day.
That's deep. So, we have a letter that came in today from a gentleman in Raleigh.
Oh, sounds great. Would you mind reading it, Wolfman?
Certainly. Let's see. Some mutual friends connected me to a girl recently as if on a blind date, saying they thought we'd make a great couple, or at least great friends, if not a couple.
Of course.
So I went out to see her, and we ended up spending the whole day together, trading stories, eating ice cream, and having a lot of laughs.
Good so far?
Yeah, yeah. I thought things were going great, especially when she said, oh my gosh, get this. She said, I'm going to be the model for a nude life drawing class tonight. You want to come?
Ooh la la.
Oh my. He goes on, her being in this class was arranged in advance, and she had no reason to invite me. She could have told me that she was busy in the evening and said goodbye for the day, but instead, she invited me to see her naked and draw her.
Well then.
And I thought she was beautiful with her clothes on, but after seeing that, I was pretty much sold on her.
Oh, I see where this is going.
You do?
It's textbook. Boys are dumb, and nothing happened between them, and he wants to know if she's really into him or not.
Would you just let me finish the story, Jeannie?
We already know the ending.
Just let me finish!
Oh, all right.
Thank you. Let's see here. We hung out a while after that, and when we said goodnight, it seemed to be as friends.
Aha!
Cut it out. If we're just going to be friends, then I don't know what to make of it that she invited me to see her posing naked for 2 hours. Where do we go from here? Help! Thanks. Romantically reeling in Raleigh.
See, I told you.
Wow. How did you guess the ending?
I told you. It's textbook. Boys are dumb and will stick around even if they are confused. As long as sex might be happening.
Oh, that's sexist, Jeannie.
And to answer his question, the answer is both yes and no. She's into you, but wanted you to make the first move. As much as we've reached the emphatic yes era of society, There are still plenty of women that play it coy and hint until the man makes the first actual move. He didn't make the move, and she lost interest.
So what does he do now?
Well, I hope he drew a picture. It will last longer.
Well then, another helpful tidbit of advice from Jeannie the Giant.
Are we calling that advice?
Hey!
Jeannie, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Wolfman Dave.
Mm-hmm. I think she likes you.
Leave it alone, Jocelyn.
I've got an idea. Let's change the subject. We have a little segment we call Take Your Health Back, of which we talk about different health issues that we have and how to resolve them.
And since I have resolved none of my own health issues, why don't you lead us in? What are we talking about today?
Well, today we're talking about how we've become the, for lack of a better term, a pill society, where we're always taking pills or vitamins or supplements in order to resolve everyday problems.
Popping them pills.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether or not it's that you take a multivitamin and an aspirin and, you know, maybe this other anxiety medication and. Mm-hmm.
Well, two of those things that I can speak to off the dome are, one, vitamins. If you're eating actual food, vitamins are in the food. You don't need to take a multivitamin and right. add it. I mean, all it's going to do is make your pee turn green.
Well, and that's part of the issue. I mean, if you think about it, people start on these vitamins with their children. Mm-hmm. So you've got children taking those yummy, gummy vitamins, right? Which are super tasty.
Oh, yeah. I eat those like actual candy.
You know, but I'm not convinced that children actually need them if they're actually eating, oh, I don't know, vegetables, fruit.
Yeah.
All the choices of the pyramid, nuts, raisins.
Yeah. The other thing that I can speak to that you just mentioned is tablets of various kinds. I mean, I have a long history with back pain.
Mm.
I injured myself on the job several years ago, and it keeps coming back on me.
Sure.
And so, yes, I can throw all the painkillers I want at it if I have a flare-up or whatever, but what actually does the job is soldiering on through it and starting to stretch and build up muscle again. I mean, drugs right. were okay for me while the injury was new.
Sure.
What was really good for me was all that tasty physical therapy.
Right. And that's the point of a medication is to taper off the medication.
Yeah, to arrive at a normalizing point where you can resume physical activity. And indeed, I did.
You know, and for some, the taking of the actual medication is the nerve-wracking aspect. You know, nobody wants to necessarily be reliant upon a medication. And to me, that's a valid fear to feel that, you know, needing to rely on something every day should be unusual. But then we take it to the next level of, you know, again, acceptance and recognizing that everybody has different issues and it's okay to be mm-hmm. on a medication every day. And we've suddenly taken that idea to the extreme of it's okay to be on 2, 3, 4 medications every day. In fact, everybody does. And isn't that normal? And shouldn't we all be okay with that? And, until you think about it for a minute.
And why am I still peeing funny colors?
You know, and so not to deny anyone their medication. I actually understand the idea that we are often imbalanced and need something to keep us balanced. We live very high stress lives. Many people do need something in order to keep themselves at a more normal level, whatever that may mm-hmm. or may not be. What I'm suggesting is if you are somewhere in your life where you're taking, I don't know, bunches of different vitamins, you're taking some sort of medication, maybe 2 or 3, maybe you've been asked to take this sort of aspirin every day, or you find yourself taking painkillers more often than you'd like to. Or maybe you're one of those people that's truly on that medical marijuana to smoke the bowl, to keep your brain from going too fast, the anti-nausea, and all the things at once. What I'm asking you to do is to consider what are the most simplified, natural options you might have to reduce the amount of pills and supplements that you take. Is there something you could eat that would involve putting more into your diet that might trigger some sort of manufacture of a hormone better? Have you done that research to take yourself to that healthier place and avoid, I don't know, for lack of a better term, processed chemicals in your body?
And it starts at home, it starts in the family, and it starts young. So please, oh please, oh please, stop sending your kids to school with their breakfast of hot Cheetos. I'm tired of hearing this story. Why is it hot Cheetos?
Why is it hot Cheetos? They must be super cheap.
No nutrients in it.
So that being said, of course, you know, we here at Intervision Entertainment and on the Approximate Hour encourage everybody to make their own decisions in life. However, when you do make that decision, consider a healthier one. Take your health back.
I have an idea.
Let's change the subject!
And now, time for Geeky Gossip with the Guys. Joining us is Ryan Phillips, executive producer and CEO of Intervision Entertainment.
Hi, Ryan.
Hey, Ryan.
Hello.
So, let's see. We're talking about characters from the Star Wars universe that can successfully kill a Jedi Knight, to include Bubba Fett.
Bubba Fett? Boba Fett.
Yeah, he never killed the Jedi.
Oh, you mean that tasty drink with the balls in it?
No, Boba Fett, son of Jango.
Oh, I love that movie. Jamie Foxx was hilarious.
No, it's a different Jango.
Different movie, different genre.
There's no D.
Oh, I know. The D is silent.
Not where I come from. Anyway, so, like, Boba Fett, yeah, never killed a Jedi.
No, he didn't. He tried. He gets a lot of credit because over the Starlock pit, he did go straight for Luke.
Yeah.
But he lost that fight.
Well, yes, because some gimp who was completely blind accidentally hit his jetpack and knocked him in.
Yeah, yeah.
He went out like a punk.
Well, yeah, he did go out, went down a Sarlacc's gullet. He did make it back out of that, but that's a completely different subject.
Well, no. Let's talk about this. Hang on a minute. So Boba Fett is one of, like, the most overhyped characters in the entire Star Wars universe. Because, let me tell you what he did. In The Empire Strikes Back, he stood around looking pimp. But otherwise, stood around.
He actually showed up in a 1978 Christmas special, and that's... and
don't!
From there, he was just popular.
Don't even. Don't even with me right now.
Just went there.
Don't even with me with the whole Christmas special thing. Not canon. Didn't happen. You know what else that...
Back then, everything was canon. It was all Lucas all the time.
No, you know what else was in that? A sex tape for Wookiees. Okay, so I don't want
to
hear about it.
Okay, so getting back to who could kill a Jedi Knight.
Boba Fett can't.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
so we're
agreed.
Ruling him out.
So agreed.
Yeah, why not like a punk?
Now, are we going to only talk about him or the Fetts in general?
Well, the Fetts in general don't really count because Jango fought Obi-Wan once, mm-hmm. and ended up running from that. Yeah. And then he tried to attack Mace Windu, and that didn't turn out so well either.
Yeah, he was decrepit. Yeah.
So we're ruling them both out.
Yeah, yeah, okay, the clan Fett is out.
Moving on,
since they're Force users, so they kind of are in the same category with Jedi. And I think what we're really talking about is what non-Force users can kill a Force user.
Yeah.
And aside from the guys trained by Darth Revan to cloud their minds so the Jedi's senses didn't pick it up.
Right.
And even then, a lot of them aren't noted by name.
Right. Well, and you played more of Knights of the Old Republic than I have.
I did get him from that, yes. So, and I've been doing my internet research.
Yeah. So what you've got going on back there is that when the Sith were numerous, it was kind of a draw, really. I mean, a powerful Jedi could take a...
So we're saying a Sith can kill a Jedi, but they're the same as a Jedi because they're Force
users.
They're
Force users.
So do they count or not?
I think they count as the who can kill a Sith as well.
Yeah.
Because they have the exact same attacks and defenses as the Jedi.
The Jedi don't use the lightning, and the Sith don't use the absorb skill, so...
Yeah, it's kind of balances out. I think, was it HK-79 was the, also from the Old Republic, was a droid designed specifically to kill Jedi there's no specifics done. It was only listed in both the books and the video games he was in. He had a high Jedi kill count.
Okay. Well, speaking of droids, General Grievous. Now, did we see him take out a Jedi?
Only in Clone Wars in Clone Wars.
Yeah, because he waxed Jedi left and right.
Three or four at a time.
In the Clone Wars series. And... partly, you know, he has a stronger body. He's got sort of an Iron Man thing going on, where he's got a robot body, and he can carry four lightsabers at a time.
And he uses the robotic processing, so his reflexes go faster. And in fact, he's listed on the Star Wars wiki as the only non-Force user to ever kill a Jedi in lightsaber combat.
Well, and if you play, you know, the Lego Star Wars game, this happens all the time.
Okay, yeah. Well, because General Grievous, until you actually hit the movie in which his CG model debuted, was a right BA. Oh. Just a right bastard.
Right. Well, and even then, if you go with the shorter Clone Wars, the one where they attack Coruscant, he's whooping ass, and he's, in fact, defeating Mace Windu in lightsaber combat when Mace Windu just crushes his life support system.
Yeah, where he gets that famous cough of his.
Right, and he didn't have time to repair before he fought Kenobi.
Yeah, because that moment, like, that series leads up to the second that Revenge of the Sith actually starts. So,
right. And you could use one could reasonably use the argument that he stepped up to Obi-Wan even though he was damaged, going, yeah. Well, I've kicked this guy's ass before.
So
let's
do it
again.
Yes on Grievous.
We're yes on Grievous because he's demonstrated this skill many times over.
Okay, moving on.
The other overwhelming
amount of firepower.
Order 66, yeah.
Yeah, Order 66, where they just threw tons of clones. And that seems to have been, in the Old Republic, the way you took out a Jedi. It was you just threw so much firepower at them that they couldn't block everything.
You just got to get something through that net.
Right. And you don't close with them, and you might take a platoon of 200 guys.
Well, now here's where I'm curious. I actually need you to answer this for me, because I didn't play Knights of the Old Republic. But it has characters that are not Force users.
Right.
You have, like, smugglers and bounty hunters and the equivalent of stormtroopers, I guess.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's different troops going around.
Knocking around with Old Republic Jedi and Sith.
Right. What worked really well in that is to have your Force user fighting in combat and have your other guy shooting at the Dark Jedi.
Yes, okay.
Which worked out great.
Because I'm counting it as fiction, but I'm making a concession for the fact that it's a game mechanic that they have to account for. So
it still falls under overwhelming amount of firepower.
Yeah, it is canon, as far as I know.
And the other thing is, there's a line in, dare I say, The Phantom Menace, I'm sorry, but where the young Anakin says, oh, well, nobody can kill a Jedi. And Qui-Gon says, well, that's actually not true. And I'm wondering what he was talking about, because I don't think in the film series we actually see a Jedi or a Sith get taken out by a mundane of any kind.
Well, there is the part...
Except for Order 66, when it was just massive amounts of dudes shooting a fish in a barrel, pretty much.
Well, the end of the Clone Wars as well, where they had those 30-some-odd Jedi in the arena, and they just launched however many hundreds of battle droids at them. You notice they didn't show any individual Jedi being shot down.
Right.
But as you're getting the panning scenes over the battle, you do see Jedi dead on the ground.
Yeah.
So we can agree.
Overwhelming firepower, yes, but no one individual... With a mundane weapon.
And not particularly efficient, obviously.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on.
Cad Bane. He actually represents the toughest of a cadre of bounty hunters that you see involved in, and I would even put Boba Fett in this, in the Clone Wars.
Yeah, same class of character, I think.
Where routinely, they'll end up trying to take on a Jedi. In fact, Cad Bane actually notes at one point when he tries to take Obi-Wan that the credit... bounty is up to 1 million credits per head.
Yeah.
And he tries, he's just...
And why would you not?
Yeah. He's just completely ineffective. He gets pushed back, and I guess you could technically say he did capture some Padawans.
Yeah.
At one point, but he never is able to hold his own against a Jedi Knight.
Yeah, a Knight proper.
Yeah.
Because I think whenever the chips were down, he actually did cut and run same as both of the Fets did.
Right, yeah.
So is he a no?
He's definitely a no.
That's a no, I think.
In fact, all your top end bounty hunters, and that seems to be a routine thing that comes up over and over again, is you got a lot of guys who try.
Yeah.
And when they walk in with a lot of confidence, they usually end up running before the end of the fight's over.
Well, no, I might have an exception for you though. A guy who flashed Mandalorian signs. He wasn't a Mando himself, but his name was Dirge.
The last person on our list.
Yeah, in the cartoon Clone Wars series. He was, because bounty hunter is such a nebulous thing, it can basically just mean mercenary at this point.
I think that is the basic
term.
Yeah,
and the bounty that you collect, I guess, is your pay for being a mercenary. Kill fee. So this dude who was flashing the Mandalorian skull, wasn't Mandalorian armor, but his name was Dirge. And you see him leading armies of battle droids. And here's a dude who can take a tank with a lance. Like, he's on the back of a motorcycle with a lance in his head, carves a divot into a tank and blows it up. So this guy is tough stuff. Then you see him take on Obi-Wan Kenobi and a scad of other Jedi. And through sheer physical might, he can knock them back and forth. And he's just a gunslinger at that point. You think he's just a dude. Just mowing them down with firepower. Obi-Wan runs him through with a lightsaber, and the dude gives the creepiest laugh I've ever heard. And he's revealed for what he truly is, this hideous tentacle monster! He's knocking Jedi left and right, and the funny thing is, it's hard to say, spoiler alert, it's hard to say that they won and he lost, because apparently he has this Wolverine-like ability to regenerate himself.
Did he manage to kill one in that fight, though?
I can't remember, actually.
He's a maybe? Okay, so I'm just calling, for funsies, let's go outside of the Star Wars universe.
Wolverine.
Wolverine.
Now, we've already seen that lightsabers have trouble with some metals. Like, there was that blast door that Qui-Gon couldn't quite get through. So some metal can tolerate a strike from a lightsaber. I'm going to say if adamantium advertises itself as the unbreakable metal, then that adamantium is that metal.
Well, then you just... Well, basically anybody, any Starfleet officer with a phaser set on widebeam, because you've seen... Because a flamethrower, as just demonstrated with Boba Fett, kind of just morphs its way around there.
Well, you can't block a cloud of flame.
Yeah. Same thing. You just put it on widebeam, which basically brings out this cone of energy, and just... And you just have gone around the blade.
Interesting.
Okay, so...
It's the overwhelming firepower in the hands of one man.
So we've thrown Wolverine and Captain Kirk into a fight with a Jedi.
Okay.
Who do we actually think wins?
Oh, Captain Kirk. He just doesn't lose.
Okay.
He's Kirk.
He just shags his way out of a bad situation. Excuse me. I'm too sexy to die.
Well, see, he would defeat Wolverine, and he'd inevitably...
Hold on, why is that a given?
He'd defeat Wolverine, and he'd inevitably be up against some female Jedi and just seduce her.
Okay, see, I'm not sure if the hosts of this show agree, so thank you so much for coming
Ryan.
Okay,
hang on
In summary, let's see, we've got the Fets are a no.
Fets are a no.
They're just regular bounty hunters and definitely no with the rest of them.
That's a negatory, Ghost Rider.
Okay, the Sith.
Sith, yes. Force users, yes, can definitely take them because they've got the same powers.
Yep. Okay, well, and that's kind of part of the argument. Is it really valid if they're kind of the same because they're also Force users? But, okay.
Or is it more badass if they don't have the Force?
Right. Okay.
Right.
Like?
Grievous.
General Grievous.
Grievous, definitely
ding,
a yes.
Ding, ding,
ding.
He killed more Jedi than I think anybody else on screen that they showed.
Sure enough.
An overwhelming amount of firepower just thrown at them.
Yes. But you need a lot of dudes.
If you take the Death Star and just shoot the planet out from underneath them, you're good.
Okay.
Oh, that's one we didn't encounter.
Okay.
One Death Star. I would like one Death Star, please.
bounty hunters, such as Cad Bane.
No. While they had a great reputation, they never actually won those fights.
Never really took a Jedi. Nope.
And then we have a maybe left on Dirge, because we don't know if that actually happened.
We'll say he fought him to a stalemate, which is still not a victory.
And I'm just going to say on the overwhelming firepower note, what if it's Iron Man, and it's like one guy with like 87 guns on his body?
Possibly, but that's for another story.
Again, thank you for coming in, Ryan.
Iron Man could take a Jedi.
All right.
You want to be a real
And Wolverine wins them all, and no one agrees about your Captain Kirk theory. Thank you so much for coming in, Ryan.
Everybody agrees on Captain Kirk.
Okay, Iron Man versus Captain Kirk.
Captain Kirk, he just figures
out a way. Oh my goodness.
Iron Man, hold on a minute.
Put Captain
you are wrong. You are wrong.
In the spirit of Halloween, today's featured performance is a reading of Anthony by Wolfman Dave, inspired by The Viper by Alan Schwartz.
He was calling himself Anthony these days. Anthony was still unpacking boxes in the gray dimness of the first day, still putting boxes onto shelves and clothes into drawers, and the heavy thing in the wooden box into a safe hiding place. They'd set him up with a job he started next Monday, but he still had time to settle himself, time to get used to the new digs, and time to forget that night in June.
He didn't know why he hooked up the phone on that gray morning. Perhaps they'd call him soon to tell him the coast was clear, but he wasn't optimistic. Any more than he knew why the phone rang mere hours after he'd hooked it up. Maybe his new landlord or his new boss, any more than he knew why he picked up as enthusiastically as he did.
"Hello, this is Anthony," he said with feigned cheerfulness.
"Hello, Anthony,"
said the low, tense voice he didn't recognize, with a touch of some foreign accent he couldn't place.
"I am the Viper. I come for you in 2 days.
Anthony felt the muscles in his back pull tight as a piano wire. His grip tightened around the phone, still held to his ear expectantly, as if the silent static of a dead line would give way to some further details. A full minute later, he set the phone back down on the hook and thought, maybe it was just a crank caller. No one at all had this number except the agents and himself. It must be someone having a laugh. Or maybe... No, it couldn't possibly. It was just a crank caller.
Anthony made himself a snack and tried to put it out of his mind. In the late, dark afternoon of the second day, Anthony found himself quite uncharacteristically enjoying a cup of tea. His old self wouldn't have had one at all, or wouldn't have enjoyed it. but Anthony was just that type of fellow, he imagined. He set his muck down next to the wooden box with the heavy thing inside.
Boss Magnus once told him never to let it out of his sight. Since the phone rang yesterday, he hadn't. The phone rang again. Perhaps it was his new job. He started Monday. Calling to give him some details. It was probably important. He stood and picked up the horn. "Hello, this is Anthony," he said, again feigning some enthusiasm.
"Hello again, Anthony," said the Viper. "I am the Viper. Be ready. I come for you tomorrow."
Anthony shifted his weight from one foot to the other. He gingerly set down the phone and felt sweat bead on his forehead as he racked every corner of his brain for an answer. The Viper. He imagined he remembered someone who used such a name. The Cobra, the Anaconda, the Constrictor, maybe? No, it must have been the Viper. But who was he? One of Boss Magnus's soldiers? An independent hitman? He opened the wooden box and ran his fingers over the heavy thing inside. Boss Magnus once told Anthony, before he was Anthony, that it hadn't been fired since 1992, that Anthony's father last fired it in defense of his son. How fitting.
As he loaded the Colt slowly, bullet by bullet, he remembered that Boss Magnus had told him, when they last met, that there was nowhere he could run, and no place he could hide. Maybe he was right. Maybe he could never escape the mistake that he made that night in June. But as he drew back the hammer on his father's pistol, Anthony swore to make this Viper sorry he'd ever slithered out of his hole, him and any other snake Boss Magnus sent after him. He sat on the sofa chair in the front room, laid the pistol on his lap, and waited. The hours passed like days as the blood pounded in his ears and electrified his fingertips. He never shot a man. It's not to say he'd never killed a man, but he'd never shot a man. His steely fingers tensed and relaxed on the handle, just as his jaw tensed and relaxed. His pupils dilated and contracted, and he stared at the door, the knob, the lock, the keyhole, and into the blackness he once inhabited when he had a different name. And suddenly, it was morning.
His eyes were red and cold in the smoky light of late morning, and focused on the door. And there came a knock, and another. Anthony rose from his chair, priming his pistol and standing to the side of the doorframe. "Who is it?" he said smoothly, with a voice he didn't recognize.
"I am the Viper," came the answer.
Anthony peered through the peephole and saw nothing. He's off to the side, he thought. Now or never. He steeled himself, stealthily reached for the knob, and tore the door open, pointing his father's pistol into thin air. He looked down, and a diminutive woman, fully a foot and a half shorter than Anthony, suddenly squealed at the sight of the gun. A diminutive woman with a squeegee and a bucket. "Who are you?" demanded Anthony.
"I am the Viper," the little woman said timidly, hiding behind her bucket. "I wish to wash and wipe your windows."
And now for the Intervision update. Dia de los Muertos is coming to Strathern Park from 4 to 8 p.m. in Simi Valley this November 1st, with vendors, face painting, dancing, and special appearance from famous local storyteller True Thomas. Not to be confused with Santa True, rumored to be the same guy in a different costume.
Rehearsals are in full swing for our upcoming San Diego leg of the Mickey and Worm Tour, coming to the Elks Lodge in La Mesa, November 13th through 15th, available now on brownpapertickets.com. Mickey and Worm at the Elks Lodge. Almost sounds like the name of an old Disney cartoon.
The Approximate Hour, Intervision Entertainment's first podcast, is now available online at intervisionentertainment.com. Of course, you know that. You're listening to it.
The vocal duo of Ghislaine and Wolfman Dave successfully sang at the medieval-themed wedding of April and Brian Knight. When I say successful, there may or may not have been a song called Dumb Guy in a Truck, written about a local that laid on his horn for almost a minute during our set.
Dumb guy in a truck.
Dumb guy in a truck.
And now we'd like to welcome writer, actor, producer,
Joe Filippone. Greetings, Joe, and welcome to the Approximate Hour.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
First question. Are you ready? This is one we're always curious about. What did you have for lunch today?
What did I have? Oh, I had Subway, because I was on set for the series that I'm producing, and we got the Subway platter, so had a couple of those. A
couple of footlongs, eh?
Right. I wish, you know, they're like the little ones. I don't even think they're 6 inches. I think they're the 4-inch ones.
What a size queen.
Right?
Okay, second question. What would you consider your first art project, and how did that inspire you to be the artist you are today?
Oh, gosh. Well, I guess my first, like, proper art project was the first play that I did when I was 6 years old. I was a dancing platypus in a Christmas pageant that my church put on, and I guess that really inspired me because I've always wanted to be an actor and be in entertainment since I was three, ever since I saw The Wizard of Oz. And so, you know, 3 years later at 6 years old, that was kind of the first step. And I've
living
been,
the dream.
Yeah. It's
as a
like,
platypus.
Yeah, it's over 20 years now that I've been in the business and lucky enough to have been doing it for that long. So that kind of set the groundwork.
That's awesome.
I have so many questions.
I have so many answers.
Oh boy. The illustrious start. Oh, speaking of, platypuses, are you a cat person, dog person, other? We'll talk about pets.
I'm a dog person for sure. I don't mind cats, but if I have a choice, it'll be a dog all the way. Dogs, they're just more fun to play with. You know, cats like kind of want to do their own thing on their own time, and a dog is always willing to play.
You like to be the boss of your pets is what you're saying.
Kind of. I just want to have a pet that, like, when I come home, you know, they're happy to see me, you know, where cats are just kind of like, yeah, you're back home, feed me, where a dog is just like, oh my god, never leave me again. Oh. But I need to have big dogs. I'm not like a fan of the little dogs. Like, I'm always afraid that I'm gonna step on them.
Sure.
So I like the big dogs that, like, you know, I can like wrestle with or like play fetch with, you know, an active dog like that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But you know, those little dogs actually say, kick me, kick me.
Right. And sound. I'm always like, every time I go into someone's house and it's a little dog, I'm like, oh my god, where's the dog? Am I gonna step on it?
I do have a follow-up question to that. Do you like fish? Because we've got some we're trying to give away with a 100-gallon tank to go with it.
I do like fish. I had a goldfish for a while. I think the thing lasted like a month or so, and then, you know, it was one of those, I forget where I got it, but it was one of those goldfish, like, you know, they all die, like, you know, within weeks or whatever.
So you like them, but you may not be good with them.
Yeah.
Still don't think we found the right person.
No.
Well, I mean, at this point, I think they're free to a good home.
Right.
I'm afraid of you.
Yeah, and I live with college boys, so you know, like, ooh, you know, the college boys with like their pot and their girlfriends and their rock music. I mean, who knows what's gonna happen to the fish?
You sound ancient.
I know.
Oh, those kids with their rock and their girls and their.
I'm turning 29 on Saturday, and I'm living with like 22 year olds. That is ancient.
Oh boy.
You know how old that is in Hollywood years?
Well, it's like you're in your late 20s. You know how you know? Your 20s are almost dead.
Right?
Oh,
let us talk about my late 20s.
So, speaking of responsibility, what is your current day job, and do you feel it is still artistic?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very lucky, you know, knock on wood, that I've been in LA now 7 years, and pretty much all of that time, like, every job that I've had, it's been in entertainment, so I'm really lucky that my day job is my dream. I don't always make a lot of money from it, and I still struggle, but, you know, whether it's acting or working behind the scenes or, you know, being a novelist or whatever, I get to create, you know, all day, every day. So I'm very lucky, and I know I'm in a position where a lot of people wish that they were in that position, so I never take it for granted, because it could go away from me at any time, you know?
Well, as a sort of follow-up to that, there are 168 hours in a week. How much time do you spend a week outside of your day job? How much time do you spend a week working on your art?
probably most of those hours. I'm, you know, such a workaholic. And you know, we had kind of talked about, you know, earlier where I'm always doing something, you know, to if it's just jotting down an idea for, you know, the next book or going over lines, you know, in my head or thinking about what I got to do for, you know, the series that I'm producing or whatever. It's like all of those. And even when I'm sleeping, like it's gone to that point now where I'm you know,
you
dreaming
sleep?
About the things.
You actually
occasionally
sleep.
Occasionally, not sometimes, not that long, but thank God for coffee.
Well, I wonder if the audience picked up that whistle. Did you hear that whistling sound of our door?
Joe, can you shut the door real quick?
Yeah, right.
we you know, we record this podcast in the beauty and comfort of our home.
By the way, I'm leaving that in.
Right, that's too funny not to.
Well, now I've given you something else to obsess about, because now you know how many hours there are in a week. And you're going to be like, okay, that's 8 hours last night sleeping.
Right.
Oh, boy, I'm only down to 160.
Right. The worst thing is I'm... I'm taking a class right now with two casting directors, Megan Foley and Chuck Mara, and they gave us a schedule to block out like every 15 minutes in a day. And looking at that, I was like, my God, I need a social life. Because it was like all like work. And then I was like breaking it up into like all the categories of like the different jobs that I have. And I was like, I literally have no life. Like I'm a boring person. I'm that workaholic that doesn't do anything.
Well, though,
although our work is fun.
Yeah.
Well, here's your social life. I shall be in a play.
Right.
Social eye.
Right. And I think, like, you know, when you love what you do, like we do, like it doesn't feel like work. You know.
It's true. And you do spend a lot of time with people you care about, which is
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Big important question. All right. What is your favorite hair color?
On me or other people?
Sure. Yes.
You're not the first to ask that, so.
You know, I like, you know, reddish brown and
like an auburn?
Yeah, and I think if I could, if I had like the skin tone to do it, I'd want to go like red and be like a redhead and
sure.
I also love like the two-toned, you know, like if it's blonde with the dark roots.
Right,
or
right.
I think that looks really cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Cool. Awesome. Okay. Finally, if you were in a fight with a Jedi Knight, name at least one reason why you would win.
Because I've got amazing wit, and I would tell a really funny, dirty joke and make him laugh, and that would be my in to lightsaber him to death.
So you'd like the cut of his lightsaber, but he'd like the cut of your jib.
Right.
That's all we got for you. Thank you. Thanks a lot for joining us. If people want to catch more of your work, where's the best place to find you? Is there a website, a Facebook page, that sort of thing?
I mean, I'm on social media, and I promote everything that I do on there. So if you guys have Facebook, you can like me on Facebook at facebook.com/officialjoefilipponi. If you're on Twitter or Instagram, you can follow me at Joe Filipponi. And I have a YouTube channel that I post like book trailers that I make for my novels and clips of stuff that I've been in and occasionally just like random videos. And that's youtube.com/thehiphopjoe. So
nice.
I'm easy to find. Yeah.
Well, thank
you.
Joe.
You had me at I'm easy.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, right. That's how I've lasted 20 years in the business.
Also
true.
Well, thanks for coming in, man.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Much obliged.
Yeah, anytime.
And to close this show, we bring you the approximate hours thought of the day. Take it away, Ghislaine.
There's that old saying, cheaters never prosper. Truth is, bad cheaters never prosper. A good cheater never, ever gets caught.
And that's our show. Many thanks to Joe Filippone, who graced us with his presence. Join us next week as we discuss the challenges of getting our tour of Mickey and Worm ready for the next leg of the tour this November in San Diego. I'm Wolfman Dave.
And I'm Ghislaine, signing off.
And I still don't have an Emmy.
Emmy! Emmy, where are you?
The approximate hour.
Scene! Okay, everybody can fart now. Oh, boy. Oh, that felt wonderful.
Right?
Wow. I'm sorry, this room is really small, so you better open that door.
Yeah.